The Vox Markets Podcast.
Welcome to Ticking Stock. It's 12 o'clock, of course, and it's the 15th of January, 2024. It's cold outside, warm inside. John May is here, of course, from SP Angel. John, how's your arm?
Yeah, it's on the mend.
Yeah, you're back home now, though. So last time we spoke, less than last week. There must be a bit of a shock in the temperature for you, John. I think coming from Argentina.
You know what? I like the British climate. I might be the only one, but I like it being a bit cooler. Where as soon as the temperature goes over 30 degrees, I start to melt.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. Yeah, no, I like that as long as it's not wet. I don't mind this, you know, this crispy sort of sun out where it's a bit frosty. I quite like that. But it's the wetness I hate. I've often thought one of my ambitions pretty much is to leave the country for 3 months a year, maybe, you know, December, January, February, come back for March, you know.
Yeah, that's a nice thing to do if you can afford it.
Yeah. Welcome, everyone. Join in. Any results, any news out today, let us know. Hit that thumbs up button if you could. Subscribe to the channel. Of course, download the Vox Markets app, voxmarkets.co.uk/app. Let's have a quick look at the indices here, John. Let's see what's moving and shaking here. Down. It's all down, pretty much. FTSE 100 down 0.28%. In fact, the FTSE AMOL share is not doing as bad. It's doing least worse, as I often say. 0.07%, 748. Some of the rises in the FTSE, the Flutter, Admiral, Rightmove, in fact, bit of news on Rightmove. And in fact, the title of this video is Will Housing Price Appreciation, because now we're starting to see, I think, Knight's Frank, they did guide down for house prices this year, now they're guiding up for house prices this year. And of course, that has a huge knock-on impact on the rest of the economy. When house prices start to go up, people feel a bit flush, they spend a bit more, construction, you know, it goes up, all that kind of stuff. So maybe that's a bullish thing. Let's look at the fallers here today. Ocado, Burberry, of course. Do you have any Burberry, John?
No, that is a very expensive store these days.
I know it is, isn't it? I can't see that the style has changed much over the years. But look, the banks are down. HSBC, Lloyds, St. James's Place, of course, the asset manager. We've come under a bit of flack recently. Frisnilu, is that how you say it? John has done 1.6.
Yeah,
what is happening with the commodities at the moment? Let's look at the commodities and what's happening. Because I know I saw a news report on freight rates. And freight rates have gone up to a 15-month high due to the Suez issue. But in fact, today, you know, Brent is down a little bit. It was starting to rise here, but down just close to 2%. Any commodities you've seen, John, with copper, of course, Dr. Copper, barometer for the world economy, it's struggling a little bit. Let me just take some lines off here because I've got too many lines on here.
It is struggling, and normally the first couple of weeks of the year sees a bit of a run in copper. And actually, Dr. Copper is telling you that it doesn't know where it's going right now. The industry is enormously optimistic about prices on the medium to long term. You've got Glencore forecasting $15,000 a ton, and that's the CEO of Glencore. I mean, it's not just a wistful forecast. It's if you want more copper production in the world, you got to pay higher prices. It's as simple as that. We see treatment and refining charges falling in China. This is on a relatively spot basis. And that tells you that there is an increasing shortage of copper concentrates available. So the indications are, and the implications are, that copper prices should go up. But right now, prices seem to be falling. And that says that today, there's just a bit more physical copper around than the world needs. That's probably European manufacturers being cautious and careful. We're still seeing a slowdown in manufacturing in Europe, whilst actually in the US and China, manufacturing looks quite good. So that's partly because of the reshoring of manufacturing back to the US, and partly because the Chinese are very good at finding new markets for their products. So when you look at all the new electric vehicles coming out of China, they are selling bucket loads of these things, if I can use that expression, into Indonesia, Vietnam, all those other Asian countries are new markets for them.
Yeah. Now, interesting. So longer term, I mean, the profile, of course, expected to go up. But let's have a look at this house price here, because it's quite interesting. And They've creeped up, as experts predict, a smoother year for buyers and sellers. Meanwhile, the real estate consultancy Knight Frank said now expects house prices to rise by 3% in 2024, and they had been expecting, that's a bit of a change there, they're expecting a house price to fall by 4%, and now they're saying they're going to go up by, you know, 3%, so that's a 7% change. Average house prices have jumped by about £4,500 this month. Experts still predicting that 2024 is a smoother year. Rightmove says typical asking price for British house now stands at £359,000. Are you a homeowner, John?
Yes, I am, yes. but look, I worry about the UK economy, the impact on new buyers coming into the market. It is so difficult for young people to buy houses that I actually think the government's been irresponsible in the way that it has encouraged house prices to rise. And we need higher inflation than house prices going forwards. We need higher wage inflation. And I'm not sure how that's going to be managed.
No, well, every government, every successive government said they're going to hit house, you know, building targets, and they never have, never, ever. The number of new houses coming to the market for sale is also 15% higher than this time in 2023, outpacing the 5% increase in demand from buyers. So look at this. It says here in Britain, 1/3 of households are renting, 1/3 have a mortgage on their home, and 1/3 own their home outright. So you can see maybe, you know, so as a 2/3 pretty much are going to be affected by the increase in finance costs. Of course, you know, a lot of landlords have mortgages as well. So what they do is have to put their prices up. So, but it does say, this is from the Bank of England here, house market is closely linked to consumer spending. When house prices go up, homeowners feel better off, feel more confident. Some people will borrow more against the value of their house. I don't know that's going to happen now, though, because if mortgage rates are higher, maybe they wouldn't take on, you know, release the equity.
But I think much of this is dependent on new buying. So when somebody buys a house, they tend to do a few things to it. So they need to keep the number of transactions going in the marketplace. And remember, the government makes something over $10 billion a year off stamp duty and transaction costs. So that's huge revenue for the government.
Yeah. Okay, a couple of comments. Hirish says, does MTech still float your boat, or have you become a bit disinterested? I've put it through the spreadsheet, and it's just the margins are getting worse. Last time I looked at it, I'll have to look through them again once I have results. I know the share price in MTech is hit the bottom, and it seems to be rising a little bit. But fundamentally, it's risen recently, but it's, you know, look at that. It's a downward trend, but it's trying to rally a bit. John, someone said, Bushveld, you know, what are the stocks you cover? Look at that. Another chart that's a disastrous one since 2019, pretty much. It was at 50 pence in November, end of 2018, and that's 1.3 pence. Well, so a little bit of news out. What's happening here, John? I mean, it's one of the most read on Vox. I'm just checking it out here. But where was it? Bushveld, further update on outstanding funds, down 28% today. The pain is getting harder for holders.
We all feel quite damaged by this company, I'm afraid. Yes, they said they haven't got the cash in yet from the buyers. It's all down to conditions precedent. Remember that in South Africa, everybody goes on holiday, and I mean everybody, over Christmas. They take a minimum of 2 weeks off, and that's the lawyers and the corporate finances and all the people required to make a transaction like this happen. So hopefully it will. Hopefully the transaction will happen and the money will arrive, but you don't send the money over until the conditions have been met. It's just one of those things. It's like completing on a house. You do not complete on a house unless all the bits and pieces have been signed off, because the mortgage company won't send the money over till it's all been done. So I think that's the market reaction feels a bit extreme. I think that's more of a trading reaction than anything else. Bushveld does have a solid underlying business, but of course it's struggling at these vanadium prices. But Craig Coltman, who's the new CEO of Bushveld, is a solid guy. He's a good quality CEO. He's come out of De Beers, so you know he's come from a very good stable, and he's trying to put the company on the right path, and this financing is an important step in that direction.
Yeah, well, at the moment it's a stumbling block, isn't it? Because I mean, look at that. That it hit the low down here, really dipped down, and then bounced a little bit to 1.1, 1.2, and it's rallied. You know, it's almost doubled there. But today's share price has taken it almost back down to that support level, the lows there. It has bounced a little bit off that, but it's a painful hold. Do you hold any stock in this, John, or not?
I'm not holding it, assuming that the deal does happen, this ought to be a good buying opportunity at this price level. So it's very difficult to guess because the company is so leveraged to the vanadium price and to the South African rand, and costs are rising in South Africa, but they have overcome so many of the cost issues that they've had in the past. For example, they're much better set from an energy perspective. They don't suffer so much from load shedding in the way that they did. Vanadium redox batteries are still part of the energy equation, and in fact may become more popular going forwards. And of course, if vanadium redox batteries do start to go better, then the demand for vanadium will pick up and hopefully prices will improve.
So the prices for vanadium, how much do they come off? I can't obviously look at the chart here.
Well, it's not that they've come off so much. It's just that they're not high enough to really to generate a lot of profit for Bushveld, which clearly means that they have to continue to cut costs. And that's what Craig Coltman's been doing. He's been in there cutting costs right, left and centre.
Yeah, okay, all right. Let's have a quick look at the front page of Vox, see what people are reading looking at here. So most followed companies, Audioboom, they did come up with some figures today. It did rise early on, but it's gone back down now. But Plarium, by the way, obviously another popular one, but that's been painful for me. But they did say, they commented on, I don't know why they did this, but basically one significant holder has swapped for another. Newcomb is already a significant holder, but they bought up the shares. And Marty has basically sold off. But it's been a painful looking chart. For I got out of these after their problems recently, but look at that. That's another one. It's from a quid on a share down to 7p. Okay, let's look at some of the figures from Audioboom. Of course, podcasting network. I cut my phone off there. My son's trying to call me for some reason. I don't know why. He's in the house. This is for the year ended. They're saying it's turning around, but it has started to recover, Audioboom, anyway. They're saying, you know, group revenue growth for the quarter, Q4 this was, up 37% on Q3 and up 5% on Q4 2022. And it's Q4 was the highest revenue quarter since 2022. And of course, digital advertising, which they sort of rely on through their podcast, that's been hammered during the downturn. One of the areas that always gets hammered in the downturn. They're saying they're going back to profit, generating cash and all that stuff. So it is good news, but it's come off, I suppose, because it's had a decent rally off the bottom here. And the chairman's been buying all the way down. But like I said, it's come off from, look, 135, it's almost three-quarter shares. So it's more than doubled. You can get this, can't you? When you get stock, it's oversold massively. You know, you can get a quick rebound, technically, from the bottom, and then it needs to consolidate, you know. Have you seen any news, John, in the resource area? They've got Bushveld there, one of the most read, Valerium, Union Jack Oil, talking about if it net revenues of 18 million from Wrestel, they own 40% of that. This is a chart on that. Do you hold any oil stocks, John?
Not at the moment. I used to hold them as a hedge against filling my oil tank. But since I moved on to a heat pump, I haven't felt the need to do that.
Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. Jadestone Energy guidance there down. What's it? Some of the rises and falls. Masters up. Global Thor Mining, one of the rises here today. Alba Mineral Resources, Predator Oil and Gas. What are the fallers here? Well, Bushveld is number one faller today. Wow. Do you know about Tirupati Graphite, John? Anything about graphite?
Yeah, we know a bit about those guys. They're running a graphite mine in Madagascar. It's a difficult country to operate in at the best of times, although it is doing better on the corruption index than it used to. Actually, the big project in Madagascar that we're interested in is Base Resources ilmenite rutile project on the coast. I'm trying to think of the name of it.
So 96 million. Let's look.
It's the Toliara project.
Toliara project, yeah. NPV of 1 billion, is that right?
Yes. Wow. And they improved the MPV recently by adding a
monazite. Doubled it. 2 billion, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
So that's interesting. I mean, the project's been waiting for about 4 or 5 years now for a permit. In fact, I went down there with 15 other analysts to look at the project. Every one of us got unfortunately very unwell on that trip. From I won't call it food poisoning. It was worse than that. It was the local equivalent to salmonella.
Oh my word!
Which wasn't a lot of fun.
That must happen a lot. So John, if you're traveling around different places, just, you know, if you're used to eating, we get so used to eating the kind of stuff we eat on a regular basis, and you change your diet like that. And what did you eat then? What was it that caused that?
We had a kind of smoked fish.
Oh, fish. Yes. Yeah, yeah, just so I think you go vegetarian when you go abroad sometimes. Maybe a little easier, isn't it? okay, so any comments here? Let's look. Informer says, if I go all in on Pepecoin, can I stop going to work? I have no idea what Pepecoin is. I assume it's some kind of crypto nonsense, but yeah, crypto's not doing very well since the ETFs have launched. Looks like house, this is Dagger 888, looks like house builders have finished a little downturn. Let's have a look. Are you, how many stocks do you hold, John?
Not a lot at the moment. Most of my portfolio is private right now.
Okay. You mean private is in private companies, not public?
Private companies. It's,
yeah, it's in private, I'm not telling you.
No, I'm heavily invested in battery metals going forwards, in copper in Zambia, in lithium in Ghana, in high-grade alumina in Australia, just to name a few.
What's that? High-grade alumina in Australia? Oh, okay.
Alumina is for the separator plates for lithium-ion batteries.
Oh, interesting. Yes.
So we're very keen to help incubate companies going forwards, and hopefully these companies will list in London at some stage.
Did you see it recently? There was a Microsoft talking about, I don't know who it was. Was it Microsoft talking about getting better power from lithium, or reducing the amount of lithium needed? Did you see that story? I can't think what it was. I'm sure.
Yes. Microsoft are using artificial intelligence to try and figure out better molecular structures or atomic structures for designing lithium ion batteries. So I think a lot of this is in relation to going from semi-solid state to solid state batteries. So the reason why the electrolyte is so good in a battery is because it creates a very good connection between the anode and effectively the anode and the cathode. So the electrolyte, because it's in liquid form, or in fact it's more like a gel, creates a very good connection. If you can go onto a solid state battery, you create a safer battery that in theory should work better. But creating that connection is actually more difficult. Creating a full connection across the surface area is easier with a liquid than a solid. Mm. Now, Toyota say they've got a solid state lithium ion battery. One of the Chinese companies reckons that they've done it as well. And that is the next step to creating much, much better, much safer and more high density batteries going forwards for electric vehicles. And this is the key. I mean, as we saw in the week, Hertz have decided to bin their electric vehicle fleet and they're going back to internal combustion engines. But that's largely because of the problems with repairing the fleet of Teslas that they have. But if we look forwards to 5 or 10 years, the batteries that will be going into these cars are going to be twice the power density and be, I won't say they'll be more reliable because they're actually generally quite reliable now anyway, but they will just be that much better. And that will apply to your iPhone as well. You'll have a smaller battery that will be more powerful. And so everything will improve. It's not going to be quite as good as Moore's law with semiconductors, but you are going to see a steady year-on-year improvement in the quality and the power density within the batteries coming through. We're already seeing so much innovation in this area.
Yeah, well, there's a London listed company as well. I mean, in fact, their head office is literally about a 5-minute walk away from me. they're called Ilika, and they do solid-state batteries, and they're sort of early-stage, but they've got sort of two components at the moment. They're using them in, you know, medical devices. They're changing very often, but they have got a Goliath program, which is for their electric cars, and that's going through, I think, what was the last stage they came at? They were at a stage where, so they're only a 54 million market cap company, but they did say lithium-ion parity development milestone. So this was in 6th of December. So this is energy density, the Goliath large format, and they're saying it's in tests now. It's at parity with lithium ion, so it's improving. So it's a small company, but it does seem solid state is the way forward. But have you heard of Ilika?
I don't know this one. I think the key thing is that artificial intelligence is going to throw out all sorts of new ideas that the scientists will then work on and will test. And as a result, we are going to get better proteins for healthcare, we're going to get better batteries for electric vehicles. So it's going to impact so many areas and effectively just speed up R&D and development.
Yeah. So UK builders blame planning delays, but it's in their interest to keep supply low, I suppose. Surely they'd benefit more from just building more, wouldn't they? I don't know. I don't know what the politics are.
Let's also have a bit of a shortfall of Polish builders right now because they're all busy in Poland. But I mean, that's one of the problems for the housing market is actually just a lack of qualified builders and tradespeople to do stuff.
Yeah. Well, listen, I think I did say a while back, I think the house builders have had a good run. I mean, they've come from their lows, and that's one of the smaller ones, Gleeson. It's come off a bit. I think that I disagree the downturn has ended. I think we're going to have a bit more of a volatile time from the house builders, because if you look at one of the biggest and best, best margins, a good balance sheet, is Taylor Wimpey. Like I say, it's done about 80-odd%, from the lows back in October. To where we are now. I think we'll have a little rollover here now because it's a good run. They've had a cracking run, house builders. They do tend to, move ahead of any recovery.
But definitely the house builders, if they see a bit of a downturn coming, they are absolute bastards. They will put back all the tradespeople. They will stop projects dead in their tracks if they feel that they're going to have problems with selling those properties going forward.
Yeah, it's a family show, John. No, they can't constrain the industry. But that's part of the thing, isn't it? Once they see, an upturn happening, like I said, there's so many support industries rely on house builders, that everything sort of benefits. So unless the house builders are doing well, the rest of the industry, economy finds it really hard to flourish, really, doesn't it? It's because they support so much from everything, just from materials to building merchants to people doing up their own homes, all that stuff. So they are largely the gatekeeper, aren't they, to a certain extent, to the economy a bit,
Yeah, and we still can't get builders around here. They are like hen's teeth.
Are they? Oh, yeah. They should start selling hen's teeth.
Yeah.
Okay. I just want some top business. Sorry, finish off some comments here. The mining sector, the freight rate is quite interesting, John. We'll look at that in a bit. But the mining sector will be watching China's GDP figures, which are due soon. Also, China never lowered their interest rates, which could be an indicator of better GDP figures. Yeah, but again, do we trust what China says? And in fact, Steve says that, reliability of that. But Mr. Steve said he used to work at HSBC, used to laugh when their figures stayed at 6-7% for years and years on end. Yeah, how reliable are the Chinese figures, John? They're not, are they?
I think a lot of the detailed figures are actually very good, probably better than our own, because in China they've got a very good collection network. It's when you come to the top line GDP number that you know that there is a degree of manipulation going on. Mm. So I'm not worried about a lot of the figures they put out, but of course, when you look at the headline number, that's what you should be more careful with. And there is a great deal of debate over whether those GDP figures are actually real or not. If you look at capital economics, they're normally about 2-3% lower than the actual official numbers.
Yeah. By the way, as Steve Lewis says, what did John think of the project with Base Resources? We got slightly sidetracked by food poisoning. Thanks a lot.
Toliara, it is one of the world's great titanium rutile projects. It has good value because of the byproducts that it will produce. So, yes, if that project goes ahead, it will transform base resources, no doubt about it.
Yeah. So here's, look at this. First of all, London Finance Jobs, this is a bit of business news here. They've slumped nearly 40%. Job opportunities in London's financial sector plummeted by nearly 40% last year, recruiting Morgan McKinley said on Monday, as market turbulence and high inflation led employers to tighten their belts. Available jobs in finance decreased by 30%, 23%. And in fact, look at that. They said here, there was a 42% decrease in jobs available in the fourth quarter of 2023, specifically versus prior years, the largest drops since 2008. So that says a lot, doesn't it? You know, when you're going back to the great financial crisis, when that essentially centered, you know, on the City of London, on banks, all that stuff, you know, a lot of banks are sort of going through or being, you know, bailed out. When you have that kind of downturn in jobs, that's kind of worrying. But I suppose, you know, 2008, 2009, the recovery happened. So maybe we're not far off the recovery here. This is container freight rates in Europe, 15-month high. So literally, we're talking about November 2023 was down at, what, 2,000. This is Platts Container Rate 3, North Asia, Mediterranean. But this is, three and a half times where they are back in November now. And they say a lot of this is down to, as well, not only the Suez Canal and that stuff, but Chinese New Year. Because apparently everything shuts down in Chinese New Year, so everyone tries to get things out into the borders. It's quite a busy time of year anyway to get things going before the shutdown. It's quite a big deal, isn't it, Chinese New Year?
Yes, and you have to wonder whether the Houthi attack on shipping in the Red Sea was kind of timed to catch this moment in time. You know, just when everybody's trying to get stuff into Western markets out of China, and also out of countries like India as well. So it's not just China that's exporting to the West. There's a whole bunch of other Asian countries that are trying to ship things into Europe and the US. And the Suez Canal is the quickest way through. It adds another 10 to 15 days onto a container ship going around around Cape Town. And so that means you're losing that ship for maybe 20, 30 days, one way or another. And that slows down the whole process.
Yeah, well, I said that's the issue, along with the Chinese New Year. But, you know, because it slows down delivery of these things, people are trying to get more containers out there because it takes a longer time. And therefore, you know, there's a lot of demand on container loads. But that's going to, you know, that kind of rise there. I mean, they do say it'll normalise, you know, the fact is, you know, happening right now in the Chinese New Year is about to happen is not good because apparently container rates do normalise in Q2. But that's not going to help, is it, with inflation? You know, inflation is a thing that it is the enemy, you know, at the moment. Central banks, you know, find it hard to bring it down anyway. Now you get the supply side sort of inflation happening, and that's really hard to bring down because you can't. So, we may have a wobble in Q1, like I said. I've been saying for a while, I think the markets will have a wobble Q1. But I think, you know, when we get, well, in fact, it's all about inflation, isn't it, I suppose? In fact, this week we've got inflation data coming out. But unless that starts to ease, then central banks will not ease.
I don't see this as massively inflationary. I think what China is exporting deflation because it's selling, it's overproducing many products, and then it's trying to sell them as much as it can. Europe, of course, is suffering, so isn't buying so much. US consumers are also being more cautious than they were, if you look at the statistics. So China is having to work harder to sell the products that it's making, and that is a deflationary thing. Now, in fact, China is just picking up from some of that at the moment. So, in fact, the latest data on Chinese CPI is actually positive. But we are seeing this deflationary impact from the lower cost of Chinese goods. Of course, the shops that we go into will be making hay on the back of that. Whether they pass it on is another matter.
Yeah. CAPD, Capital Limited. John, do you know anything about Capital Limited? CAPD ticker. Someone's asked your opinion on that. So they provide
The drilling service, company. Yes.
Yeah. Services. Drillers.
There's a lot of drilling going on in the world. So a lot of explorers are quite busy. I guess there's been a bit of a slump last year in terms of money raised for exploration. So it may be that they're parking a few rigs up at the moment. Difficult to know right now. I think though, you know, we are still raising money for exploration companies, although share prices are lower because we've been in a bear market from a commodities perspective. But stuff is still going on. I still see the companies pushing ahead with their work programs, but just not at the pace they were going at before. But if you look at the battery metals business, lithium companies are drilling more than they've ever done before by a country mile. Copper companies are generally pretty good. They're still drilling. So you've got certain areas within the mining space still running at quite a fast pace.
Well, look, that's a good trend here. That's Capital Limited chart. That's from 2019, pretty much, down at 37 pence. It's almost trebled. I mean, it did treble. And then it's come back a bit from January. It's come down from, you know, 117 to 80 pence. But it's looking like now, if you look, I've put a line in there, just where it's hit sort of lows, and it's now back above that 200-day moving average, which seems maybe it's going to... Sometimes you get that sell-off, and it has to go sideways for a while. But, yeah, maybe that was a good buy down here to 80 pence. But what do you think, John? I mean, is it all reliant on China? I mean, you know, like I say, junior resource companies, you know, minnows have been hammered. What will be the stimulus that will get them going? Because I know a lot of people who listen to Vox do hold resource companies. What's your thoughts on resource companies, and what will be the catalyst to moving them, the share price, all that stuff?
Generally, markets start to pick up when there's a bit of M&A activity going on. And we saw news this morning from a company called Metals Tech in Australia of an extraordinary deal where they've had an offer for $81 million to buy what was a previously defunct gold project in Slovakia. This is the, if you remember Ortec Resources, which is now Arc Minerals, Ortec's principal asset was the Sturek gold mine in Slovakia, which they were drilling and evaluating, but they could never get a license on it. So after many years and a great deal of frustration and expense, they sold that project on to a group called Metals Tech. And Metals Tech now have an offer of $36 million in cash, so they tell us. And that's on completion. Another $20 million when they get the underground mining permit. And then a further $25 million as a deferred lump sum in lieu of a retained royalty. So that's an extraordinary amount of money, particularly the initial 36 million. We can only assume that somebody knows that there's a permit on the way. But certainly this has defeated quite a number of people who tried to get a permit for this mine in Slovakia for many, many years. So that's the sort of deal that gets things moving.
Yeah. So, and in fact, looking at you saying gold there, gold is looking good, isn't it? Look at that. I mean, we're not far off its highs here. We are at $2,056 pretty much futures here, and you know, look at the highs.
Well, you're
just,
right,
just
there.
Just the highs.
And when gold prices lift like this, it tends to lift the entire sector anyway.
Okay. In fact, talking about gold, a company is not they trade gold, but Rams is a nice little shop. Their results are there, 64 million market cap. The final results, they do pawnbroking, effects, gold, all that stuff, loans. But they come out with annual results today. Share price has dropped by 5%. Don't know why. I mean, look at the results here. I mean, they are like 64 million market cap. RFX is ticker. Top line up 27%. All double digit growth. All of them. And they're saying strong performance across, you know, jewelry, gold, all that stuff. And they can't see the gold price going down, so that'll benefit them. But first time they've hit 10 million pre-tax profit. And they're only a 64 million market cap company, you know, and they've got plenty of cash. So I don't see. Sometimes you get final results. It's a liquidity event for some people trying to get out. I understand that. But I think cracking results there. And I think it's almost a contrarian play on the consumer because it is, like I said, it's that area where people are going for loans, pawnbroking, trading their gold and stuff. So that gold price there will only be good for them because, you know, the higher that goes up and people are a bit skinned at the moment, they're just pawning their gold. So, yeah, Ramsden's worth a look at. So, yeah, I can't. And also, gold tends to rally, doesn't it? When? I said, during the. Where was it by? Oddly, you know, in fact, there we are. If you go back to 2008 and 2009, it dipped down to great financial crisis. Then, of course, easing of monetary policy, interest rates flat. And look at that. It went from literally, what, $800 pretty much to $1,900, doubled in the next 10 years. Next 2 years, sorry. A massive rollover then, really odd. From 2012 Why did that happen? That was odd, that, isn't it? From 2012, literally, to 2020, it just rolled over a little bit and then rallied again.
But I think you'll find a lot of this is US dollar related.
Yeah.
The Fed was loosening monetary policy. Interest rates were coming down. The US dollar was not doing so well as a result. And that's what happens. Gold tends to follow the US dollar.
Was it just profit day? Because this, I just said, it did rally. Obviously, they reduced interest rates and the dollar was weakening here. But from 2016 or 2011 to literally...
I'm getting that wrong. The US, as the dollar falls, gold prices should rise.
Yeah.
That's the way it normally works.
But I'm thinking now we could go on another run for gold. You know, definitely another run. But
because we've had a period of very strong US dollar strengthening, and now that that's in fact, gold has held remarkably well through that period.
Yeah,
certainly over the last year or so. Now the dollar should start to fall off if the Fed does start to reduce interest rates, and I suspect they will towards the end of the year. Then that will have a marked impact on currencies around the world.
Yeah. Final comment. Oh, you did mention this last week, actually. And Mr. Steve, any thoughts on from John on the age-old Tulakapi Progress Keffi? It's a good thing I had them passed on from my great-great-grandfather when they started the TK process.
Fair comment. It's taking an awful long time. Yeah. But I do think Harry Adams has got he's got everything lined up. There's a lot of money trapped in Ethiopia. Companies like Inchcape and Co. They've all got money that's stuck in the country, and this is a mechanism where they can invest that money, and they'll be able to get hopefully dividend returns out of Ethiopia as a result of this mine.
Yeah, marvelous stuff. Thanks everyone. Don't forget to hit that thumbs up if you could. Share, subscribe to the channel. Download the Vox Markets app, voxmarkets.co.uk, /app. And Johnny, thanks very much for that. How's your arm feeling? You got any pain there, John?
I think I've got a torn muscle in the back, so yes, it hurts. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, hopefully it'll be better for. So when are you going to get back on the horse then?
Not for a couple of months.
Okay. All right. Marvelous stuff. Right. John, thanks for that, fella, and we'll speak next weeky.
Thanks, Justin.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.